Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hello, once again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We are coming at you for the last time from Japan. Tomorrow's our last full day in the country, and then the next day we're going to jump on a ferry and head to Shanghai. And Kitty and I are both looking forward to this boat trip coming up very much because it's going to give us some time to reflect on our month that we've spent biking around the land of the rising sun. It's been an awesome trip so far. For the most part, there have been some downsides, but mostly really, really good stuff has happened. One small problem with bicycle touring that I've found is while you've got all day on the bikes, you don't have a lot of time to just sit back and reflect like you might have if you were sitting on a bus or, as we will be pretty soon, sitting on a boat. And another downside is it hasn't given me much time to work on my photos and on this podcast, which we're taking one day off right now, so I'm putting together one last episode. This episode is with my wife, Katie. We recorded it about a week ago, or maybe a little more. I'm starting to lose track of time here. It's just been going so fast here in Japan. But we had maybe a couple free hours at a campground a while back, and we just gave a little play-by-play of what had happened to us so far. There have been some really interesting things going on as we cycled around. I'm going to keep this introduction short, and we'll get into it. Since we recorded this podcast, though, we've also run into all kinds of crazy adventures, and I think maybe I'll do one more show about that, about the last couple of weeks that we've had, and then definitely I want to just put together some thoughts on Japan in general, maybe give some advice on how to do a bicycle trip in this country and some of the things that have worked really well for us, others that have not. So look for that in the next week, but for right now, let's jump back in time about 10 days or something and get into Kitty and my talk about our trip so far in Japan. We're sitting here at, I think, the nicest campsite we've been at in Japan.
I think this is the nicest campsite you've been at on our whole trip, other than maybe view-wise, some places in Iceland were more spectacular.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But this place has a little river pond lined with stones, plus little gazebos, plus the kitchen cooking area, and it's free.
It's unbelievable.
So the free part kind of trumps the other places, that it's just so well set up and so well kept, and it's free, which is amazing.
There doesn't even seem to be anybody in charge of this place.
Yeah,
and it's totally clean.
How this works.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to talk about that later. Just the camping situation in Japan, how the price has nothing at all to do with the quality of the place.
And we're kind of finding these places just by doing Google searches a couple times a day. And some of them, and just looking at the reviews, there's not really much of a description about the place other than the review.
Yeah, just, and every day is just a new adventure here.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our bike trip.
Okay.
We have been on the road since Osaka, since the last time I recorded a podcast, for 14 days. And we've been biking for until today for 9 days straight.
Yeah.
So we're pretty sore and tired, but this is really our first chance to record a podcast in a while, so we're going to get it done.
Yeah, and I think actually before we totally dive into this
yep.
bike trip adventure and all the stories and everything that goes with it, we should kind of take a moment to reflect back to our first time we did a bike trip together. And I think that that's important because as I've gone over hardships and other obstacles in life, I like to take a moment to celebrate, really, the little steps. And so about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you and I went on a bike trip to Devil's Lake. We biked there and brought along way too much crap because we're also climbing and other adventures on that weekend. But anyway, that was our first trip, and we both acknowledged that we wanted to do a bike touring trip. But it's not something you really do for a week. You know, Wisconsin wasn't really the right place because, like, oh, well, we can bike to Minneapolis. Okay.
We thought about it, actually. We
thought about that. Or bike to around Lake Michigan. Or we've been talking about possibilities. And here we are. We finally have done... We're in the middle of a bike touring trip, and we're here several years later. For me, several injuries later. A few injuries have gotten in the way from between my knees and plantar fasciitis and tearing my Achilles tendon. And so it's
that
pretty,
little thing.
That little thing, that little injury. So, yeah, it's pretty great to be here, you know, being active, like active tourism, which is... And have the time, you know. Teaching, I get like a week off here or there, and I can't complain because as the teacher, I get time off. That's great. But we're on a bike tour finally.
Well, we're on a year-long tour
yes.
for starters, but this is just the biking segment of it.
Right.
So time, I mean, we've got a lot of time, but not much time at the same time. I mean, we're constantly doing stuff. I mean, we're always busy here. I haven't...
This is our first planned rest day that wasn't because of some bike breakdown.
And we only had one of those.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how we left Osaka.
Okay.
Because that's where I was last time I recorded an intro for the previous podcast. We left Osaka on our bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Fully loaded with our panniers, all of our gear. And we had a pretty... unambitious day planned, I'd say. We were just trying to get to Kobe.
Right.
Which, if you look at the map, they're really close together.
It's like 35 kilometers.
Yeah, between downtown areas.
Yeah.
But they do look like distinct cities on the map. And the downside of what we found out on our first day is the cities just bleed right into each other.
And we read about that, we heard from others that it takes about a day to get out of the cities. But we're like, whatever, there'll be some space in between. But no, like, it was nonstop houses and traffic and stoplights, and took us a little longer than we thought to get from Osaka to Kobe, just because so many stoplights. And then you're either on a road that doesn't have much of a shoulder, or... you're on a sidewalk, which you've got to avoid the grandmas and the grandpas who are also riding their bicycles and walking, and it just took longer than we thought. And
yeah.
It wasn't really that enjoyable of a ride.
And, well, we had to get to Kobe at a certain time, too, remember?
Yeah, to get the ferry.
We wanted to get a ferry down to
Takamatsu.
Right, Takamatsu on Shikoku Island. And there were, like, two or three per day, I think?
I think five.
Oh, five? But we were going to catch the last one until that night. There was like an overnight version of the ferry. But we had to get there by maybe like 1 p.m.
Right.
to catch this ferry. And it was so much slower going than we thought it would be. And there's just so many turns. And I just thought we'd get out of the city and there'd be just countryside. But it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But we made it. We made it with maybe 45 minutes to spare, half an hour.
Yeah.
A quick bought our tickets. Got everything loaded. We had just a couple extra minutes to grab some lunch from like a 7-Eleven type store before we left. And we just rushed. And then suddenly we got on this ferry and then it was just relaxation.
It was like a 4-hour ferry?
Yeah, something like that. It was pretty long.
It was pretty long. And, you know, that's another thing that we should take a minute to talk about is some of these ferries are not like, some of them are just you roll the bike on and it's 20 minutes and you roll the bike off. And some are legitimate places to sit with booths and places to nap.
Yeah.
And chandeliers in the middle and a vending machine section. And this one even had a pachinko parlor.
Oh,
it had
really?
A little gambling area upstairs.
Oh.
On the deck where you could go out and watch the sunset and stuff. So these are, some of these are quite nice little ferries. They're pretty impressive, really.
Yeah, they're like miniature cruise ships almost, or like low-end cruises.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So if you're on it for more than an hour or so, you really usually have like a pretty nice sitting area to hang out.
Yeah, we were sitting, and I wanted to go take a nap, so I went up to the nap room, immediately got woken up as soon as I lay down, and I thought it was because I had sneakily removed one of the life jackets from the holding bin and used that as a pillow. And I thought, this lady is going to yell at me for that. And she said, no, this is the ladies' room. This only.
Oh, you went on the wrong one.
Yeah, but there was nothing even written in English on that door. I didn't realize it was for women only.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, wow, they're like really egalitarian here.
Yeah.
So I had to, there was only one other person in it, and she was female, but whatever. So I had to go to the other waiting room, or napping room. But they have napping rooms, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
All right, so that ferry took us around a couple islands, and we went to Shikoku, which is one of the bigger islands of Japan.
Yep.
And the south part of it. And we got to Takamatsu at, it was dark already.
It was 6 or so?
Yeah, and it's already dark by 6 here.
Yeah.
So we had to find a campsite. And
we were new to this. At this point, we're kind of new to, now we're pretty much pros, just like rolling into a city, finding, marking a couple spots on the map, going and checking them out. But at this beginning stage, we were kind of amateurs to finding parks.
Yeah, because there was no real campsite in this town.
Right.
And, I mean, you can always stay in hotels, but let's face it, Japan's expensive. A hotel's like $100 a night or more. We're not going to do that for a month straight in Japan. That would just completely blow our budgets. So,
and we're carrying all the stuff to camp. So.
Yeah, and we have a tent, so why
not? So I found a great website called Bike Across Japan, or Bike the Length of Japan. And that website had a whole bunch of information on there about camping and tips to finding places and stuff like that. And so you can put a link to that in the show notes. For anybody wishing to do a bike trip in Japan, I highly recommend checking that one out. And one of the tips they gave was that almost every city has some river or creek going through it. And it said, like, oftentimes along those rivers, there's like a little green park area. And so we first wanted to find a park, and we were like, oh, crap, this is like a really tourist attraction park. Like, we can't really camp here. And another one was too exposed, just flat and wide open. We couldn't really, like, hide there, really. And so the third place we found was along this river, and it was perfect.
Oh, yeah, it was just right.
That's right. So so we set up camp along the river, took down around 6 in the morning before we could be in anybody's way, and made breakfast and set out for the day.
Yeah, and that's basically what we read, and it's completely what we found are consistent, is that the people here will just leave you alone if you camp. Just, it's all about just staying out of their way. Don't camp in someone's backyard. Don't go on the bike path or something.
Right.
You don't have to be totally hidden, but just don't block anyone. And don't stay there for multiple days. Just go early and no one bugs you. It's really cool. So yeah. Japan is a great place for camping, just about anywhere.
And we've also found numerous campsites along the way, too. Like actual campsites.
Yeah, there are real campgrounds, too, where you go and pay, and or in this case where we are now, where you don't pay, and it's like a real campsite.
Right.
But Japan's just been awesome for that. Okay, so next day, we headed out from Takamatsu.
We did take a moment in Takamatsu to go to the garden.
Oh, yeah, there's a famous garden.
The famous garden there that was really beautiful. Ritsu-san or something like that?
Something like that.
And that was an amazing garden. Had, trees that were manicured and trimmed beautifully, and ponds and tea houses, and we even saw some really beautiful birds there as well.
Yeah, the trees here are amazing. That the what do they call it? Topiary, I think. But not shaping them like animals, but just shaping them into really cool shapes. But you think they're beautiful. I think it's like cutting off their limbs, so it's like amputation.
Yeah.
I don't know. The trees aren't so full then. But they look really cool, though. And it's just everywhere. Everyone does this. People are so particular about their gardens and their trees and stuff. It's I've never seen that in any other country I've been to.
Yeah.
So we left Takamatsu. Basically just spent the whole day biking. God, it's hard to even remember anything specific from that day till the end. We got to the town. I wrote this down. Kotohira. Kotohira was the town.
That's right. So one of the things that I think we should mention is that with bike touring, we had done a little bit of research as well about which apps to use for navigation. And we've kind of sadly gone off. There's still paper maps still exist, but it's 2017 and navigation is mostly done via apps or GPS or Google these days, yeah. Which has its pros and cons. Like sometimes I really miss just being able to find paper maps easily because they're bigger. You can see the whole space, but you also can, I don't know, you can kind of just map things out differently.
Yeah, you can get a big view.
You can rely on it.
And
I feel like navigation stuff, the problem that we had that first day was, you know, we had done research about this too, is, you know, Google is great. Google seems like it's perfect in every way. It seems like it has everything. But you know what? It doesn't. And we found that here in Japan, Google has walking and it has driving routes. It does not have a biking route option. So the driving route doesn't work for us because that takes us on the expressway. And we don't want to take the expressway. And we don't even want to take highways. Highways are also, it's too much traffic and semis are going past us. And we have all this heavy gear on our bikes that like makes us a bit wobbly when we get that air pressure from a semi. And so we're looking for a good biking route. And that first day we were trying out MapsMe. And MapsMe does have a cycle option. But, you know, as we're getting to know the app and as we're getting to know the navigation with it, it was making us turn every other road, it felt like, at times. And you were getting so frustrated. Every time you turned, it would reroute you if you got off the turn.
Oh, so it would map out a route. And on Google, if you get off the route, you just go back on the route.
Mm-hmm.
On Maps.me, you go like 10 feet off of what it says you're supposed to do. And all of a sudden, it does rerouting, and it redoes the whole thing.
And then, meanwhile, you don't know where you are because it's rerouting, and you can't use it. So anyway, the other problem we had that day, which led to an adventure, but it took us up a mountain. And we were just huffing and puffing up this mountain. And we're just like, where is it taking us? You know, we're supposed to go down this road on the other side. Well, meanwhile, we stopped and took a break just outside of Kotohira. And, I mean, you can't plan for every single tourist attraction. So we're just like, oh, I'm just going to go to the bathroom here. Turns out it's the oldest kabuki theater in all of Japan. And we did a tour of this theater. And that theater was amazing.
It's called the Kanamaruga Theater.
I'm really sorry for butchering all the names.
Kanamaruza Theater. Mm.
That was such an amazing theater. It had a rotating stage underneath it where people were pushing. We went underneath the stage and guys had to push these poles of this heavy wood. It had like maybe 10 poles in the basement that people could manually push to rotate the theater stage. Oh, man, it was crazy cool. Had trap doors. So we kind of stumbled upon that, which was awesome. And then,
it's like,
you know,
what, 200 years old?
Yes.
And so no electricity, or before electricity.
Right.
And, oh, it's just so beautiful. I'll put up the pictures.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how beautiful this theater was. And, like, emperors have sat there, and, like, the Prince of Wales has been there.
Right.
That's really cool.
And then we continue on up this mountain, and we're like, where are we going? I'm like, all right, well, let's just get over this mountain. We're already halfway up. And we get up there, and the road that we're supposed to go down doesn't exist. So we ended up just camping there for the night. Then in the morning, found another route out of there using probably something else. We were comparing different navigation apps at that point. We're like, this is stupid.
Yeah,
like, MapsMe. We were pretty mad at MapsMe that day.
It was terrible. It kept dying, and then you'd reload it, and it would literally take half an hour just to map out the new route.
Yeah, and in the reviews that I was reading online from other cyclists were saying that it's awesome for a lot of things. It tells you where there's a water source, where public bathrooms are, where tourist attractions are along the way. Like, it's really good at that stuff. But,
yeah.
And it gives you a bike route.
And it gives you elevation.
It gives you elevation.
But it only shows a line. It doesn't really give you a good scale.
Yeah.
Is this line... Is the scale 0 to 600 meters, or is it, like,
right. And, you know,
feet?
We also tried Map My Ride, and that one you can use on a desktop or, like, a laptop computer and then import it to your phone. But it doesn't have – it has some points we were trying to do, but then some cities I'd enter in, and it wouldn't recognize the city, and it wouldn't give me a route. So, anyway, my point is that as far as navigation goes, you just got to play around. And depending on what region you were in, the one blogger that I had read, they were currently in South America. And they found certain ones to work better for them than others.
Right.
You know?
Mostly we've been using Google. But Google has a major flaw, at least in Japan, because there's no biking route. That's okay, I understand that. They haven't mapped out a whole biking thing in Japan.
Right.
No big deal. But the walking route... The way they show your route is a series of blue dots, connected dots. So you have to follow the dotted line. Well, the way they show where you currently are is a blue dot. So you can't, it's when you're on a bike and you're looking at your phone and moving, it's nearly impossible to see where the hell you are because you're a blue dot and your line is a blue dot, a bunch of blue dots.
Yeah.
And like all they'd have to do is change the color of the dot.
And that's one thing that MapsMe does have, is the arrow is one color and the dotted line is like purple or something. And I think you can actually change the colors of your route,
right,
as well, which is a plus to MapsMe. So anyway, so that's, I just wanted to point out that, you know, part of bike touring is it's not all sunshine and rainbows. It's a big part of our day. It's just navigation. And we spend a lot of time just looking at, okay, which road, trying to find rivers to bike along. Rivers have been great because they're not so hilly, and sometimes you've had great bike paths along them,
yep.
You know. But this particular day, we biked up this mountain, we camped up there. On the way back down to our route, there was an abandoned building. And we stopped at the abandoned building to kind of just, you know, poke around. Who doesn't want to explore an abandoned building? I mean, that's always fun.
Yeah, totally.
So we took a few photos, right, and we're getting ready to head out. You had already been maybe like 50 meters ahead of me in a parking lot that I'd probably put my gloves on or whatever. I take a few steps on the pedal, start pedaling a little bit. I hear a clunk, and I'm like, oh, crap, maybe my gears just shifted. A few more pedals and like a big snap. And I'm like, oh God, Dan, stop. Something bad just happened.
I remember you crying.
Not yet.
Oh, no.
Not yet. So I was just like, oh my gosh, something big just happened. I get off the bike, I look at it, and there's this part between your derailleur and the wheel. It like connects the derailleur and the wheel and everything together. That had snapped.
Yeah, just a little piece of metal.
Little piece of metal, it just snapped. But without that piece of metal, my wheel does not stay on the bike. and my chain will not go. So it's a pretty important piece. And here we are. We feel like we're in the middle of nowhere. And this day was just such a crazy day. Such an amazing but crazy day. Such bad luck, such good luck. I feel like it was like a minute and a half after this part had broken. I kind of wheeled my bike over to you.
This is where you're crying.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Still not yet.
No.
Well, you were crying out of not tears of joy, but tears of
sorrow. No, I wasn't crying. No, I was not crying.
Fine. You weren't crying. Go on, continue.
I wasn't crying.
Continue.
I was just like, oh man, this sucks. And literally a minute and a half later, this two trucks pull into this abandoned parking lot. One is a flatbed truck with like a scooper digger machine out. Pardon me, I don't know all my construction vehicle names.
Just use the 5-year-old words.
I should know them because I teach 5-year-olds, which I should know all of them. But it was like a scooper digger machine. And the second guy had like a maintenance vehicle with like a, you know, small Japanese style pickup truck with all kinds of tools and things in the back. So these guys pull in and they are just hell-bent on helping us. And they see the part and one of the guys, and we're using some, he knew some English, and then Google Translate to help translate. He happened to be a welder. Okay, I just had a metal part snap in a parking lot of an abandoned building. And this building to us looked like in the middle, like on a mountainside. Maybe it was like a former, like, resort or restaurant. I don't know what it used to be, but all the windows are smashed. The furniture was thrown out through the windows down below. It was just total trash. Looked like it was, you know, being smashed up to be cleaned up or whatever. I don't know. But so it looked pretty abandoned to us. And here these guys come in. And as the day went on, we're still trying to figure out what they were doing there. Like, what were they? Were they developers? Were they, you know, what were they doing? You know, I still am not really quite sure.
I felt that they were probably planning to bring it back to its former glory.
Maybe, yeah.
But we don't know for sure.
So anyway, so the first guy is like, oh, well, I can weld this part. And we're like, what? Okay. And he's like, here, come. So he takes it into the abandoned building. And then out of nowhere, he pulls out like, first, I feel like he ran somewhere to get something, and he came back up the hill, and he pulls out 4, like, liter-sized coffee, iced coffee bottles, right? And goes into the abandoned building's kitchen, pulls out a bunch of paper cups, and he starts entertaining us. He pulls out, like, snacks and iced coffee and like cups and everything, and that's when I started to cry, like just tears of holy cow, this guy, I can't believe this is happening, and like just kindness, like this guy is not only going to try to weld my bike part, but it's going to serve me coffee while I wait in the abandoned building. Like, it was just too weird, way too weird. So he starts to try to, I think you should tell this part because you were out there. I was inside drinking the coffee. You went out there.
Oh, yeah.
And he was going to try to put the part together with a magnet.
Trying to assist in any way possible. No, he wasn't going to put it together with a magnet. He just took a magnet out, and he was trying to determine what kind of metal it was.
Right.
I figured that out. So he picked it up by the screw with the magnet, and then it fell off. And he's like, oh, the screw is one metal. And he put the magnet on the part that actually had broken. Mm-hmm. That wasn't sticking at all. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh. And then he looked kind of worried at that point. And he tried to think of the word in English. And he's like, oh, aluminium. I'm like, oh, aluminium. So this part was not whatever he thought it was. I don't know anything about welding, but he's like, this is more difficult than I thought. I think he had all of the equipment he needed in his truck.
but, to weld if it would have been like regular metal, right?
Right. But then he was like, I can't do that here, but don't worry. I'll go do it for you still. I'll just be back in a while. And so we loaded the whole bike.
Well, I think the guy with the blue truck unloaded the scuba digger machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And he put my bike in the back of that truck. And the guy who spoke some English said, okay, you know, it's going to be about 2 hours maybe.
Yeah. And he sent off, I guess the welder was just like one of the employees.
Mm.
And so there was the main guy. There were like four guys there at this mm-hmm. point. There were a couple main guys checking it out. And then there were a couple
There's
of employees.
There's one guy in a suit. The one guy with the maintenance truck who spoke some English. The guy with the scooper digger truck who was the welder. And then a Chinese guy. That was crazy. So all of a sudden, we're trying to use Google Translate, and you're trying to show the guy something in Japanese, and he's like, I'm not Japanese, I'm Chinese. And you're like, you speak Chinese! So then, so then there's a young guy who spoke Chinese, so then you could use some speaking with him.
Yeah, because I speak some Chinese. So we were talking a little bit, but then we quickly realized the Chinese guy couldn't speak Japanese, so there was still the language barrier.
It's like a triangle. They didn't have a third angle.
The missing link.
The missing link, right.
So the welder went off with the truck. We waited for a while. It probably did take a couple hours.
And then the guy got the phone call, and he said he fixed the part. He welded the part. And we're like, holy cow, he welded the part. Okay. So he brings the part back. We assemble it on the bike. We're putting the bike back together again. And the chain had come apart. And they're like, we'll just snap this chain back in place. And I was like, no, this is not right. I was like, this is not right. Like, one of the chain links only had one side. And each chain link has two sides. And they're like, look, it works, it's good.
They really wanted it to work.
And I did too, but I was like, this is not right. And so the Japanese guy who spoke some English, he got on the bike and started riding around the parking lot, and he's like, way too small for my bike. He almost fell over because he barely reached the pedals with my bike seat on. He's like, it's good. And I'm like, okay, let me try it. So then I rode around, and I'm like, it's clunking, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not right. And as I rode around on it, snap. The part snapped again. And, oh my gosh, I looked at the guy who just welded the part, and he was just like, oh. And
right.
I felt so bad. There's four people who are supposed to be working. And here, all four of these guys had given up their work day, the whole work day, basically, to help us. I mean, the other two were walking around the property and kind of having a business meeting while the part was getting welded. But still, I felt like so bad that they'd been so generous to us trying to help us, and they probably had work to do, you know? So this part broke again, and what I think was happening, and this is just, I'm not really sure because of all the language stuff, but I think that my chain link had broken, and then as it was going through the derailleur, it was putting pressure on the derailleur to sweep out, and with that motion, that's what had made that part snap, because the derailleur was pulling on it each time that broken part of the chain was going through there.
Yeah, looking back, we probably should have just taken a link out of that chain and tried it then. But we don't know what we're doing.
But they were like, no, this is fine, it's fine. So, so that made us also want to learn how to fix chains. And I didn't even realize that our multi-tool had a chain component to it. So, you know, we're doing a bike tour, and I took a bike maintenance class like 5 years ago, but it was just like a overview, very basic stuff. And like, we've got the tools, we've got the things we need, but we're learning as we go here. So now the bike is broken again. We're back to square one. So the guy with the maintenance truck loads both of our bikes up and think, okay, we're going to a bike shop. So the guy in the suit took us in his car.
Oh, yeah.
We folded your bike, put it on the maintenance truck, put my bike on the maintenance truck. We drove down into Zentsuji.
Right, Zentsuji. Zentsuji.
Zentsuji. We rode down there and went to the bike shop. Now, this guy in the parking lot already, he had already found on Google, Japan Google, or Amazon, sorry, on Japan Amazon, he had already found this bike part. Now, that also is part of the story that I don't really understand or know how that happened. Like, how did he know the name of that part? Because I have no idea what that part is called.
Right.
We'll post photos of the bike and the part and everything in the website show notes. But so he knew the name of this part to look it up.
It's not like chain or gear.
Yeah.
It's really obscure.
So he already found it. He was ready to order it. And we went down to the bike shop, and the bike shop didn't have this part. We were going to order it. It was going to take 2 days to get there. And they said, okay, do you want to do that? Do you want to wait here for 2 days? And we were like, what choice do we have, you know?
Right. I mean, it's also, like, probably specific to the brand of bike we have. Like, we have Dahome bikes. And
They were a bit worried about that because it was an American brand bike, and would it fit? Would it be the right size part? You know, whatever. So he goes ahead and he orders it on Amazon. It's going to get to his house in 2 days. And so then we're like, all right, well, we'll just find like a hotel or something. So we go across the road to get lunch with these guys. Now, we want to buy them lunch because they've been so good to us. And he refuses to let us buy him lunch. Like, will not let us buy him lunch. We're like, oh, man. Okay.
He like sneakily got up as we were eating and went and paid for it all before
right.
we could even try to get the
right,
bill.
Right. And we told him ahead of time, like, we're going to buy lunch for you.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're going to get this.
And he took out his wallet and shook it at us like, no.
Yeah.
I've got a wallet.
Anyway, so then he's like, at lunch, he's trying to explain us something about a bike. He stands up and in the aisle of the restaurant starts putting on the charades game, right? And he's like trying to tell us that he had the bike, that we can take the bike, and we can continue biking. And we're trying to kind of guess what he's trying to say, but, you know, we can't just, like, go camping somewhere or go see something with our bikes because we need a bike that's got a bike rack and all this stuff, right? So we're like, all right, well, let's just check out this bike that he's got. So we go to, somehow he has, like, a hospital. He owned the hospital or something. We go to his apartment. We're thinking, like, we're just going to go to his house. And we go to his house or this hospital parking lot. He runs across the road. He gets this bike. He comes back over. He's like, here, have this bike. They get out this, like, spray to loosen the chain. The chain's all rusty. It hasn't been used in a long time. They spray it. They lube it up. Here's this bike that we can use to go bike around in the next 2 days. We're like, okay. He's like, are you guys going to stay here? Or are you going to go somewhere else, or what are you going to do? We're like, nah, we'll just get a hotel. Yeah, they go, no, you stay here. So in this hospital that he owned, it's like hospital, pharmacy, the middle part was like an upstairs office, and then on top of the office was an apartment. So he's like, takes us up to this apartment, which was an amazing apartment. It had a nice bathroom, bedroom, living room, microwave, hot water kettle, refrigerator.
Big screen TV.
Rooftop to wash our laundry, fake fireplace. So we're like, holy shit. Okay, like, I felt like I don't want to take anything else from this guy, but I can't really say no because you know, there weren't a whole lot of hotels in the area, but there were some, but they were pretty expensive. So we're like, okay, all right, so we'll stay here. And he's like, okay, he had WeChat, so we exchanged WeChats. He's going to message us when the part comes in. Okay, so we had a rest day.
Yeah, I get the feeling this apartment was either, like, if you're staying in the hospital, like, the family can stay there, maybe.
Or... I also was wondering if it was sort of a thing that businesses have. Like, so if he's a contractor or developer, maybe other people come in and are part of the business deal, and maybe he puts them up there.
Yeah,
at
maybe.
First, I thought it was, like, a fancy hospital room. But then I realized, like, no, I think once I realized that his office was underneath that, like, it was, like, part hospital, part office for him.
But it was an unoccupied apartment at any point, like a one-bedroom apartment.
Right. So that was so sweet. And so I guess I realized at this point that, you know, as you travel, you're always learning about yourself. And one of the things that I learned is that I feel a little uncomfortable, like, taking. Like, this guy is just unbelievable to us and just keeps helping us all day long. And I prefer to be on the giving end. And it's harder for me to accept help, but in the travel situation, you're helpless. Like, you don't know where you are, you don't know where things are, you don't know how things work there, you don't have an Amazon account set up in Japan where you can order a part. Like, all those things are just more difficult for you. And this guy was so helpful to us, and we want to repay him in some way. But, you know, the thing that I kind of realized is that maybe it's karma. I've always believed in karma, just being a good person and then paying it forward. And so I left there feeling like, wow, I really need to pay it forward. I really need to make sure that I continue on his kindness and continue on his generosity as we go forward in life, you know. And I felt very, very grateful for everything he did. So anyway, so he gave us his bike, and we felt like, I just wanted a nap and a shower at this point. Like, it had been a long day. I was exhausted. But it felt like, oh, he wants us to go out and tour around.
Yep.
So he dropped the things off in the apartment, take his rusty old bike and your bike. We start biking around.
Yeah. Just looking for something to do.
Yeah.
Like, and what's in this little town? We don't know
it. Right. And then we didn't even realize this is, you know, we knew that this area of Japan was famous for this 88 pilgrimage route.
88 temples.
88 temples. And they're the pilgrims dress in white. And some of them hike from temple to temple. And it's a 1,400 kilometers in all, if you go to all of them. And it takes about 60 days of hiking 25 kilometers a day through these towns and cities to go to each one of the temples in the pilgrimage route. And this particular town had the most famous one because it was the birthplace of Kobo Daisho.
Oh, yeah, I've got that written down, too.
So
yeah, Kobo Daisho.
We wanted to go visit one of the temples, and so we looked up on Google and didn't really even know this was a famous place to stop until we got stranded there. Just so much research to do every day as far as navigating and finding places to stop along the way and learning about Japan, and it's just
totally.
So much.
Like, if you're listening at home and you've never done a long trip, you might be thinking, God, why don't these people know where they're even going? They have no clue. How is this possible? Like, I always know where I'm going to go on vacation. Well, that's because you're going for a week and you plan this a year in advance and you've got a whole year to research it. But we're just going, like, day by day here. It's a long trip.
We've already been traveling for, this is the day 96. So, you know, we've already been through several countries, and each one of those places we have to do research. So it's a bit, yeah. Bit of work to do. Anyway, so we're biking towards this temple, and we're like, all right, we're going to go check the temple out. Well, as we're biking, we've just had, you know, crazy misfortune, crazy good fortune by meeting this guy in this parking lot who's a welder who can fix the bike, who fixes the bike. The bike breaks again. Take it down to the bike shop, order the part, great fortune again. And then as we're, you know, great fortune again in finding this apartment, the free place to stay, and all of this generosity, as we're biking towards this temple, you biked over a screw. Psss, flat tire. Like, what the... Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah.
A flat tire? And all of our stuff for fixing the flat tire, we have a tube, we have tools, we have all that stuff. Well, that's back in our pannier in the apartment.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're just cruising around with nothing here.
Yeah, and, we're just going for a little bike ride just to kind of kill off the rest of the day, just to, like, and at this point, I was still in this zone, my mind was in this zone of I can't, I was still trying to process everything that just happened. Like, it just seemed so surreal. Not that the bike had broken down, of course. On a bike tour, you know your bike's going to break down at some point, you know? But the all of the yeah, everything just was crazy, right? So your tire pops. You went over a screw. It's completely flat. And we look up on Google, you know, you've got SIM cards for data because we need it for navigation, right? So you look up on Google, where's the nearest bike shop? It's like 80 meters away.
Yeah, well, there it is at the corner.
Yeah, so a holy good fortune, right? We pedal up, walked up to the bike shop. Guy patches it for you in like 20 minutes.
Yep.
Put the patch on it, and we're on our way again. That's it. Like.
But we should talk about he took the screw out.
Oh, that was crazy.
He took the screw out, and he looked at it for a couple seconds, and then he threw it in his toolbox. So he kept it. I'm like, why is he keeping this screw? And then I got to thinking, like, maybe when he looked at the screw, he was looking for his name. And then we noticed, like, as soon as we left the bike shop, he closed up because it was like 5 o'clock or whatever. And we started thinking, like, bad thoughts. Oh. Like, maybe this guy every single afternoon,
4:30, put the screw down on the bike trail, on the sidewalk, and then blows out somebody's tire, and then he fixes it for him, and it's enough money to buy him dinner. So it's like guaranteed meal every night, which is ridiculous. It doesn't actually happen, but it was just, the day was so weird. That day was so strange and so crazy that at that point, it was just all kinds of weird thoughts were going through our mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways.
But so we were back in action, patched tire. We went to the rest of the way to this temple, which is closed.
Because it was like some observance holiday or whatever, culture day.
Yeah, we weren't quite sure. There's so much that we just don't know.
Yeah.
Like why things happen, because we just don't have the language skills.
Right, right.
So we had to go back.
Yeah, I think we just called it a day. We just got dinner and called it a day. But it was just a crazy day.
At this point, it was like only 6 p.m.
Yeah.
But actually, we got dinner. Remember this? We got dinner. And it was nice. It was good food. We left, walked back to the apartment. We were just trying. Oh, the door was locked because it was a hospital and they locked their doors at 6. And so now it was like 6:30. So we're trying to figure out how to get into this place that's now locked with all of our stuff in it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this girl comes running up. Hey, hey, hey. And I was like, oh, well, she's going to help us get into the hospital, of course. And she had in her hand Katie's sunglasses. She had left her sunglasses on the bench in the restaurant that we had just eaten at.
And chased after us down the road.
Completely out of breath by this point.
Oh, she was huffing and puffing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, you are so nice.
Yeah.
And, I'm, for those of you who don't know me well, I tend to leave things behind. Dan calls it pulling a Lipak because I do it kind of often.
I basically just have to go around following her and picking up stuff that she leaves behind or drops. That's my job. But I didn't do my job that night. I missed one thing. But the restaurant employee did it for her. Anyway, so we had our glasses back. Somehow we had to call the owner again to like let us in, but he unlocked it, let us in.
Yeah.
And that was like, it was like 6:30. We're like, look, it's been a really long day. Let's just stay in for tonight.
Yeah.
Call it a day. All right. So
anyways, 2 days later, they call us up. Parts here, put the bike back together. The part fits. Go to the bike shop, get a new chain. You know, we watch a few YouTube videos there about, like, how to fix your chain. We kind of research a few more things, like, do we have all the tools we need? You know, we have the tools we need, but let's get some chain length in case of our chain breaks again, because carrying a whole chain is kind of heavy. So we made sure we get some chain length and made sure we had a few extra bolts with us. Because one of the recommendations with the frame bolts, which we actually had those, we had spare tubes, we had the tools we needed. Okay, you know, we actually realized we didn't have the tools for popping off a tire and changing a tire. I used to have some, but I don't know where they were. So we had a patch kit. So at the bike shop, when we got the bike all fixed, put back together again, we bought a few extra things that we realized we didn't have, and we set off.
All right. On the road again. We kind of got caught up that afternoon because the guy's daughter and son-in-law and grandson were there.
It was a holiday that day. November 3rd is like a culture day.
Yeah, so everybody was off, and they wanted us to sit around and
drink coffee, and they kept feeding us snacks, and we're like, oh, man, we just lost 2 more days of biking. We lost 2 days of biking because of a small typhoon that came through. So we kind of were like, really felt like we needed to get going.
But yeah, right, but at the same time, we didn't want to be rude and just go, oh, thanks for the thing, goodbye. Yeah. So we hung out for a few hours, got a late start. But we're like, okay, let's just get in like 30, 40 Ks today. Yep.
So we left at 2:30 and biked about 30 kilometers.
Right.
And we found a campsite on Google, and it was right along the ocean, and it was 200 yen, which was such a great deal. We're like, holy cow, this is so cheap.
$2.
$2.
Total.
Yeah.
$1 each.
Right. So that was great. And we, you know, got some wine and got some cake and celebrated that we're actually on the road again and starting. You know?
Yeah, it felt so good. Really great campsite, too. Kanoji was the name of the town.
Yeah, there were a few touristy things to do around there, but we skipped it at that point because we're like, we got to get started. We got to get cranking. We really wanted to head to Imabari, to the Shimane Kaido, which if you are a cyclist or if you like biking, even if you don't have a bike, this is a top recommendation to do in Japan. You can go there and rent a bike in Imabari or in the town on the other side of the
on the main
Seto Inlet Sea. And there's a 70-kilometer bike route that goes from Imabari through 6 islands. And so we had biked towards Imabari that next day, camped. We put in about 80 kilometers and camped in Imabari, and then set off the next day. And I had such an amazing appreciation for engineers on this day because that route is so well designed for bikes.
Yeah,
they did a great job. These bridges are super high up, and they're beautiful. They're beautiful suspension bridges. But it's not like it's a straight shot hill to get up to the top. They have bike lane switchbacks. So if you're a hiker, you know how great switchbacks are because it means you're not like trudging up a hill straight on, and it kind of gradually goes up and back, right? Well, they had switchback lane for bikers.
Yeah, the main road and the bike lane would just divide, and then you just go nice and gradual up the road, back and forth, or sometimes in a spiral.
Yeah, in a spiral, which are fun to go down.
Yeah, and the main road for cars would just go straight up, probably 10-degree slope at least.
Right. So the other cool thing about this route is it has a blue line you can follow.
Painted.
So
on the road.
As you go from the bridge, you go down the bridge in a spiral, which is kind of like a fun little like roller coaster bike riding adventure. And then you get on the island and you bike through the island. As you're biking through the next island, you just follow the blue line on the road. And this is great because then you don't have to use your navigation system. You don't have to use Google or Maps Me or anything like that because you just followed the route.
Right.
It's like a hiking trail. You know, when you go hiking, you don't need to rely on a device through the whole hike usually. Usually you just follow a trail and you get a trail map or trails are marked with a color or, you know, a lot of times when you're hiking anyways.
Well, places you've been hiking.
Well, not all places, but a lot of places.
Those remote South American hikes, there's just trails going everywhere and no signs.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is, it's just really well set up and super enjoyable, great views. You know, traffic is manageable.
Yeah. Great signage.
So we decided, you know, we could just go through all 6 islands, 70 kilometers, just hit it off in one day. But we're like, you know, this is the best biking we've done so far. Like, let's enjoy this. So we decided to camp on, what was the name of the island? Omishi?
Tatara was the name of the place.
Yeah, Tatara Campground.
It was just below the fourth bridge.
Yeah.
We should say, just briefly, there's bridges connecting these islands from Shikoku, is one of the bigger islands of Japan. And Japan has a lot of tiny islands.
Yeah.
So there's bridges that connect Shikoku to the main island, and there's a bunch of small islands in between. And they build these bridges really, really high off the water so that the giant ships can go underneath them.
Right.
And the first one, if you're heading south to north, which we did, I think is the longest suspension bridge in the world. And it looks like similar to the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm. It's not painted gold, but it's painted blue. But just the Golden Gate Bridge times 3. It's really architecturally amazing, just how long it is and how well built. But anyway, go on. We made it to the fourth bridge and camped
right.
there.
We camped over there for that night, and it was the kind of pricey camping. It was like, was it $1,600?
Yeah.
So like $16 for two of us to camp, which compared to that one night we camped 7 nights for free, or for this campsite where it was 200 yen. You know?
Yeah, the one time we had to pay at that point was $2, and then every other night was free. And this place, it wasn't even nicer than anywhere else we've been.
No.
And it was 16. Oh, and I mean, we could talk about this in more detail in another
one. But the thing was that this place was 600 meters from a sento, which was a public bath, which was worth it for us to camp near there because we, you know, really, sento and onsen, that's the best part about biking in Japan, is finding one nearby where you can just go. You've been biking all day, your muscles are sore, and you go and you get a place to clean up and wash up, and also a place to just sit in the bath and relax and go in the sauna. And oh, it's just amazing when you can find a campsite that is close to an onsen or a sento, which is awesome, which we did that night. It was great.
That was like the only night we've had that happen too.
Right.
So far.
We had another night where we were going to camp near an onsen, but then we ended up having another great fortune of hospitality.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so, we should get to that later.
Yeah, so the next day we set off and we decided to take an alternate route. I picked up a map that had another set of islands, another Kaido route. So we didn't finish the Shimane Kaido, which is the most touristy one, because you can get bikes along the route and at the beginning and the end. So you can rent bikes. So if you travel to Japan and you don't have bikes with you, you can easily rent bikes to do this route and drop it off anywhere along the route. Let's say you just want to do 3 islands, drop off a bike, and take a ferry from there to the mainland. So there's a lot of options for biking part of it or all of it. But we decided, you know, if we go to the other side of this island, there's a ferry that'll take us on another set of 5 or 6 islands. So we decided to do that, and it's less touristy, and you pretty much had to have your own bike to do that. And so we did that, and it said pretty much only Japanese cyclists do that because it's kind of off the tourist route. So we did that, and that night we were going to camp at this campground. We get there, and it's all, like, barbed wired up, and there is one fence there's a gate. We could have easily just gone through it and camped there on the beach.
Well, there was a locked gate. I mean, we'd have to like pass everything above the gate, but it would have been easy to do.
Well, we saw a lady walk right through it. She went underneath.
Oh,
it.
Underneath a bar. That's right. Yeah.
So we were impossible. But there's a big sign with like red letters, and you know, and we couldn't read it.
We're gonna camp there.
We're gonna camp there.
Because then if someone had stopped us, we'd just play that dumb foreigner card. Like, well, I don't know what this thing says, and it says on our phones it's a campground.
Right. So this guy across the road was outside talking to his neighbor. So we kind of like thought, well, let's just ask. We go over there and said, like, hey, excuse us. You know, he comes over, and we're like gesturing, doing the charades game again, like, here, camping, okay. And he kind of gestured back, like, oh, okay, yes, it's okay. And then he comes around the little shack with the ticket selling area, which is all closed up. And he looks at the sign and reads the red letters, and he's like, ooh, I don't know. So he's like, well, come. So we go across the road to his house, and we're not sure what he's going to show us, but he's got, like, a main house and, like, a little side building. He takes us in the side building, and he's like, just turn the bathtub on. I didn't even really ask if we want to stay or not there. He's got the bathtub water running already. He's like, okay, you sleep here, bath here. We're like, what? Okay. This is crazy. You know, he's, like, already insisting.
Yeah.
That we're going to stay there. So, again, we're just completely overwhelmed by the kindness of strangers. And he's giving us, you know, he's asked me, hey, do you guys drink? Because he translated on Google, like, the three people can drink tonight. Kind of gives me this look with his eyebrows, like, hey, what do you guys think? And I'm like, yeah, we drink, you know. So he gets out the sake and the beer and boiled peanuts that he said he boiled the peanuts and spices and
from his garden
and then later he gets out oranges and persimmons and potatoes from his garden, and I'm like, whoa, like thank you, but I can only take so much. Like, we're on a bike and I can't take like a pound of potatoes, you know?
Yeah. It was funny how he did this one thing at a time too. Like, we'd be sitting drinking for a while and he'd get up and walk to the other room and come back with something.
Yeah.
And it's just a tiny house. Like, oh, where did you have that? And then he'd walk away, come back with something else. And every, like, 5 minutes, he'd come back with a new thing. We're just sitting there going, what the hell?
Right. And, you know, we're using the Google Translator voice option to go back and forth. And he'd get maps out. And we're trying to kind of, like, communicate where we came from and where we're going and our whole story. And he gets out this magic marker and he's like, here, and starts just drawing on his map with his permanent marker of the route, and we kind of established we, you know, when we came to Japan, we didn't have a set route. We kind of were just making this shit up as we go, and we were just totally. Yeah, and we were gonna maybe bike along the eastern shore here back to Osaka after the island, or up the western shore. We started looking at elevation. We're like, oh, dang, we're going to be climbing some serious hills if we go this way. So decided to bike to Kitakyushu.
Kitakyushu.
Thank you. Kitakyushu.
Kyushu is the next very big island, the southernmost big island of Japan.
So we thought we'd just bike to there because there's a ferry from there that goes all the way back to Osaka or Kobe. So that's perfect. We can just bike all the way down there and then ferry it back. Not something that's like doable and allows for us to kind of do a reasonable number of kilometers per day with built-in time for sightseeing. We don't have to like put in 100 kilometers a day. We can still stop and see stuff along the way.
Right.
So we're going to go there. We tell the guy that. He's like, whoa, that's my hometown. And then he starts telling us that he's going there on the 12th. And he gets out his calendar. And we're talking through the calendar. And we're Google translating back and forth. But, like, when are you going to be there? I'm going there on the 12th. I got a party on the 15th. You guys are coming to my house. We're going to make a meeting point. And we're like, whoa. Like, what just happened here? Like, we just made a commitment. Did we just commit to this?
Yeah. What? Like, what's going on? Also, we should point out, this guy is 73 years old. He had a cell phone, but I don't think he really uses the internet.
It wasn't a smartphone.
No, not a smartphone.
It was a flip phone.
So we couldn't just, like, get his Facebook or get his WeChat ID or anything.
Right.
So we did
it the old school way. We established a meeting point.
Yeah.
On the map. He drew us a hand-drawn map where we're going to meet him. And we're like, And he starts writing his address and all this stuff in Japanese of, like, where we're going to meet him. We're just like,
good luck with that.
Okay, so how are we going to find this place on this paper hand-drawn map, you know, of an area we don't really know well? So we managed to find that spot on Google using my iPad and my hotspot and my phone, and I put a marker on my phone of the place I'm meeting him, and we established that we're going to call him.
We got his phone number.
But I don't have, I have a data plan, so I have internet, but I don't have a phone number. I have a phone number, but it doesn't work for making phone calls. I had to call him on Skype and try to establish with him on Google Translator that, like, I'm going to call him, but you can't call me back on this number.
And, like, we don't speak any Japanese. He doesn't really speak English. We'll see if this works out.
So
this is still coming
planning.
Up.
We calculated how many kilometers it was, how many days it might take us. We knew we probably were going to take a rest day between, which is what we're doing today. We kind of calculated that we were going to arrive there the 13th, 14th, or 15th, with about when we're going to get there. And so he's like, I'm ready for your call. It takes me half an hour to get to this meeting spot from my house, and I'm going to come pick you up after you bike through this tunnel bridge thing, and we're going to wait in this park, and he's going to come get us, and it's all going to work. And I'm sure it will. But we'll see.
Check in next time. Look at the next episode if it's out yet, because this is still the future for us.
Anyway, so, you know, again, the whole Japan trip, we've seen some great nature, some great sights, some great temples, but really, these people have just taken us in, and especially in these smaller villages, they've just taken us in. And after meeting Miyamoto, I was like, dang, I've got the major karma I've got to pay back. Like, I'm going to have to really work at being a good person.
Yeah, you'll have to start now.
Hey.
Anyways. We should talk about the masks.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Miyamoto is the guy's name. Shout out to Miyamoto if you're listening, even though you can't understand this. But go on, Katie.
So it turned out that he's an artist as well, and he had some masks hanging on his wall in his house, and he said, oh, when we first arrived, he said, oh, pardon me, I was working with wood today, and he kind of said something on the translator that, like, he had, like, a paint fume smell in his house when he walked in, and so he was kind of, like, I work with wood, and pardon the paint, you know. And so there were a few masks on the walls in his dining room area. And I asked him, like, oh, you know, how, because we're kind of running out of things to talk about after a while. We're like, oh, okay, you know, okay, you have a daughter, okay, or from America, or from here, like. And I just kind of was trying to just get to know him. He wasn't really asking us too many questions at that point. So I asked how long you've been making masks for. And he said 40 years. So, you know, we're looking at the ones that were in the dining room walls, and he says to us on translator, like, hey, you know, are you making good memories in Japan? Will you take good memories home with you? And that's what Google says from what he had said.
Yeah.
Right? So he did this thing where he'd say something in the phone, and then he'd check it, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, that's what I said. You know, and he'd get all excited, like, that's exactly what I was trying to say. So he showed it to us, and it says, would you be taking memories home with you, good memories home with you? And we're like, oh, yes, many good memories. Yes, Japan's been great to us. Well, he gets up, runs from the table, goes in another room, comes back with a mask. We're like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, my God, he's going to give us a mask. This is too much. Like, I don't want to take... I've already got oranges and persimmons and potatoes. And, like, he's been giving us drinks. I can't believe... And he's insisting, like... And we asked him for his address afterwards. And he, like, would not give us his address. I was like, maybe we can send him one of Dan's books or something like that, you know. Or do something for him in return. Like, what can we do for him? He's like, no. I know what you're going to do. I'm not going to give you my address. You know, just this feisty old man. He was so funny. And so now we have a mask. And the next day we woke up, he made us a bowl of noodles for breakfast. And he showed us his room that we didn't even really see that night. But at the entrance of his home, he's got this room with all these masks on display. And it might even be like a little mini museum for school kids in that island, like... He's got, like, the facial measurement, like, rulers that measure sort of the angle of the mask face that he might use for making them. And he's got a few signs put up. And he's got a section of sort of, like, geisha-like looking masks. And then he's got animal masks. And he's got the old man, like, almost samurai mask with the hair coming out. And, like, it's a warrior mask. And... He just had all kinds of them, and it was just amazing. It was so cool.
Yeah.
He's just such a cool guy, and definitely with a special experience for us.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Another one.
Yeah, another one. So, anyway, those were our big, big highlights for us, with the generosity of the strangers we met, for sure.
Definitely.
So... I think another thing that we should point out about biking, about touring, is and when you're doing an outdoor adventure, you've got to plan for food. How many days am I going to be out for? How far are we going to be from a town or a city or a grocery store? And another huge benefit, I think, to biking in Japan is just the convenience of things. Like, you want to drink a power, you need a power drink for your bike ride? Well, there's a vending machine. Like...
Everywhere. There's vending machines everywhere.
You can get some peach juice or a coffee or a sport drink or some flavored water, whatever you need, right? And 7-Elevens are everywhere, Family Marts, Lawson's, like they're everywhere, right? So it's kind of convenient for us. It's just easy to just stop in there, go to the bathroom. We've been using a lot of... supermarkets and places to charge our phones, and you know, those are kind of the reality of not using paper maps is you've got to have a place to recharge because you're using devices to navigate, and you've got to charge those. And campsites don't have outlets to charge in your no. charge up your stuff. So that's been a both a challenge and a convenience for us. But then you've got to like hang out in the store for. For a while, trying to charge up, you know.
A lot of them have little sitting areas, too.
Some of them do.
And if you're really lucky, it has a sitting area with an outlet right there.
But we've only had that happen, like...
Once or twice,
a few times, right? So you've got to, like, have your things hiding in the corner of the store, charging while you're sitting there drinking a coffee. And I don't know. It's also been, you know, I try to eat healthy most of the time. But I will say those convenience stores are killing it for me. Because one time I bought a bunch of stuff there. And they've got, like, pre-cooked rice, curry, noodles, like, and things that we don't get to a market. We can just buy a few things at 7-Eleven and then cook our dinner on our stove, right? But one day I spent enough money that I was able to do two drawings from this special drawing box, and I won a box of ice cream.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And we're like, oh, man. Like, I just won a six-pack of ice cream bars. So we're biking. We can't exactly just, like, take a six-pack of ice cream bars with us. We're like, what are we going to do? Like, oh, well, we need to charge our stuff. So we'll just eat these ice cream bars for a while. So we have one ice cream bar, and we're like, oh, there's four left. All right, let's eat another ice cream bar. So you had another one, I had another one. And I'm like, I can't. I can't eat three. I just can't do it. So Dan, of course, Dan can do it. He eats three ice cream bars. I go walking around the shop, like, I'm going to give it to the shopkeeper, see if she wants an ice cream bar. There's a little kid there. So then, like, kind of smiling at these Japanese parents, like, hey, kitty, do you want an ice cream bar?
Not creepy at all.
So the parents are, like, bowing and smiling back at me, and I give the kid the ice cream bar and, you know, manage to not have to waste the ice cream. But they're probably like, what the hell? Like, why is this lady giving us an ice cream bar? But it's, there's so many good treats in that, in those stores. It's so dangerous for us, but it's so convenient, and whatever, we're biking, so just got to do it.
And it's funny we're talking about charging our devices now, because my batteries are going to die pretty soon. But we can keep going, but I'm just going to stop the recording and then start it up again.
Okay.
Just to save it. Okay, we're recording again. This could die at any moment, and I'm not sure if it really saves what you're currently recording if the batteries die. So, but we have the last one saved. So let's just keep going, and I don't think we have too much more left to talk about, but let's catch up to where we are today. What did we last talk about? The Miyamoto. So from there we took off, and we had a rather long day of biking. Over so many islands. How many islands did you count that we biked over?
Well, total, it was 13 islands. From Miyamoto's, we biked through the second set of islands and went almost up to Kure. And from there, kind of went on the mainland again. We biked a short number of kilometers almost to Kure. And then there's another third set of islands that we went through that.
Oh, yeah, we decided to change our route yet again.
Yeah.
We were just going to go straight to Hiroshima from there.
Right. But that third set of islands, we went through there and camped on Ichijima, I believe. Found another beach campsite there. And then took a ferry from Ichijima.
No, it wasn't Ichijima. It was Mitaka.
Well, that was the name of the city.
That was the city. Oh, yeah. Shikata Park.
The island was Ichijima.
Oh, the island was Ichijima. Okay.
So we took a ferry from there to Hiroshima. And that was our shortest day biking, was from just through the city of Hiroshima. It was our off day of biking, which still ended up being like 25 kilometers. But
What happened when you were on your way,
We
were on our way to the ferry?
I almost forgot about this.
Yeah.
So... We had about 7 kilometers to bike from where we had camped to the ferry, and it was mostly downhill, up a few hills, down a few hills. And as we're biking down a hill, all of a sudden Dan's bag came off his bike rack somehow. He must have gone over a bump. One of his attachments came off. So his bag was like halfway hanging on. I'm like, Dan, stop. So Dan reattaches his bag. We're kind of constantly rechecking our bags because our bags need to sit on our bike rack just right. It's a lot of pressure. We're going over a lot of bumps. We're going up and down a lot of hills. And we're carrying all of our stuff on our bike rack. So our bike racks are really, really important. And we really want to make sure that both our bags and our racks are in good shape, right? So we get down to the ferry. Dan's stuff is all in good position again, and we see the ferry is there. The cars and people are unloading the ferry, and the ferry was at like maybe 9:30 or something like that, but then the next one, they came like pretty frequently, but the next one wasn't for an hour and a half.
Yeah, for most of the day, it was like every 20 minutes there was a ferry, but
yeah.
For some reason, there was an hour and a half break between this one and the next one, and these things don't wait around. They unload, load, take off.
Yeah, so we see them unloading. So Dan quick runs into the thing, gets the tickets, right? You just kind of like threw your bike off the curb, like just went straight off of like, not a ramp part of the curb, but like just off the curb, right? So I kind of just followed you because we're like running. Well, my bike goes off the curb, maybe like 4 inches off the ground or something like that. And snap, my rack broke. I'm like, oh my God, Dan, stop, my rack just broke. And they're like, well, can't you just hold it up until you get on the ferry? I'm like, oh, are you effing kidding me? I was kind of pissed at you, actually. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, there's two panniers on here, a bag of food. And I'm like, all right.
I was just like, let's get on this thing. Let's go. Let's worry about it later.
I know, but like.
It's an hour and a half wait.
It's kind of heavy, you know? So we have these amazing panniers. I just love them to death. I've had mine for maybe 7 years, and they're still holding up and doing great for me. They're Ortlieb. They're a German brand. And what you do is it's sort of a duct tape type material. You roll it down, and then you buckle it. So the buckle kind of serves like an arm loop for me, right? So I stuck my arm through this thing, had one hand on the handlebar, one hand through one loop of the bike bag, and that braced onto the seat to hold up the whole rack, which had broken off. So I have...
You're giving me this look.
Oh, man.
I understand now.
How much do you reckon those two bags and the food all weighed?
Well, it's probably 50 pounds.
So I've got that on one arm, and then I've got my hand on the handlebar, and I'm trying to jog toward the ferry, up the ferry ramp, you know, get on the boat. I'm like, all right. Dan's like coming back to help me. I'm like, I got this. Just back off. You know, like, don't try to help me with the last like 10 feet. Like, leave me alone. So we get onto the ferry and take everything off my rack. Well, what happened was one bolt must have broken off. One bolt. So that's all it needed was just one bolt repaired. And luckily we had a bunch of spare bolts and a bunch of spare pieces. So the guys on the ferry rushed over with a tool kit in hand. And no, we have the tools, but we have a very basic, lightweight type bicycle wrench. And we have a multi-tool, and we have another piece that comes that helps us fold the bikes up. So we had the stuff, but this guy had, what's it called? I don't know the name for tool.
Oh, a ratchet set.
A ratchet set, which he could hold in place the bolt on the other side while he put it through. That really helped it go a little smoother.
Yeah, basically these two ferry employees just saw Katie struggling with her bike and they ran over to help us as soon as the ferry took off.
Yeah, so we had like a 25-minute ride, quick fix the frame, fix the rack, and then in like 15 minutes and... loaded everything back on again, made sure it looked good, and it was, and it all worked out again.
We still had time to go up and sit in the lounge for a bit and watch our approach to Hiroshima.
Yeah, so, dang, it just was like, I was almost getting a bit worried at that point, like, man, something's got to happen. It's, like, not going to be this easy, you know?
And, we'll get there.
We lucked out once again. We were able to fix it. We had the stuff we needed, which which was good. So, we got to Hiroshima, and I was really impressed with Hiroshima. Had really nice bike lanes along the river. And I would say of the big cities we've been in so far, Hiroshima was the best for biking.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, there we decided to book a hostel, to do laundry, to... charge up stuff just to kind of chill for a half day, I guess. It's been like a little bit of time chilling there.
It was going to be a rest day, I guess, but there's no rest day when you're still biking half the day.
Well, and we also, it's Hiroshima, so we definitely wanted to pay our respects and go to the atomic bomb memorial and museum, and we did that. And, you know, I really am glad we did that, because I think, especially right now, with everything going on with North Korea, and we've been to a lot of places where, because we've been to North Korea, you know, the possibility of nuclear war is, when you've been to a place, you have a human connection to realizing that people of North Korea or people of anywhere, they're humans, And what happened in Hiroshima, we didn't maybe know at the time how serious the radiation would be.
oh, the scientists didn't understand that in 1945.
And seeing the footage of how people's skin melted off and the after effects of cancer and
black rain,
and it really was something that you know, I hope all people can, if they make it to Japan, make time to see, because to truly understand what governments are have a huge responsibility about living in the world together, you know, with it also pointed out how many had a map of how many nuclear weapons each country has.
Yeah.
And that was interesting to see as well, to really get the data on you know, Pakistan and India, and when different countries, you know, acquired nuclear weapons, and that was.
A lot of this info is a bit didactic, and a lot of it you can just find online. But the thing that got me was the survival stories, the survivalists.
Right.
They had maybe 10 different people being interviewed, and they were probably interviewed back in the 80s, it looked like.
Probably.
But someone went out and interviewed all the people who were still alive.
And it showed where they were in relation to the hypocenter.
Yeah.
Of where the bomb exploded. That was just...
And how old they were at the time.
Right. And, you know, some people lost 13 members of their family. And, it's horrible.
Yeah, that was really sad. And that was the best part of it, I guess, was seeing the videos of them telling their stories.
Yeah, but I guess the human story is always the most powerful, right?
Yeah, and you won't get that online, so that you just got to go and see.
Right. So that was a powerful tourist stop for us. And then the next day, you know, we took off for our trek down to Kitakyushu.
Kitakyushu.
Oh, dang. I never get it right. I'm just butchering everything. I'm really sorry.
Well, I'm butchering it too, but
yeah,
you're butchering it worse.
Yeah, thanks. So, we started off, and Dan managed to blow another tire last night, and so we got to fix a tire last night on the way.
Oh, no, that's, we've got a couple days in between that you're skipping over, but... Oh,
okay. Well, those are the exciting parts, right, is blowing out a tire?
All right, so we'll skip forward 2 days. There were some more exciting things. We stayed on this island where there were all these deer running around, and they were wild.
That's true.
And they were bugling, because it's the mating season. So I woke up to hearing...
So I apologize. I forgot about the island, another island, our last island for right now, anyways. Miyajima.
Yeah.
So Miyajima, a very popular tourist attraction just across from Hiroshima. And you can go from Peace Park right in the city for, I think it's round trip is like 3,500 or 4,000. But if you go down to the ferry, which you can take the train there, it's only 180 yen to go across from that ferry point. So we went with our bikes. So with our bikes, it was 280.
280, I think.
280 each to go across this ferry to the island. And the thing to see there is the Torii Gate, the very famous temple there. And this gate, you can watch the high tide and the low tide. It's really beautiful. You can go hiking there.
I should point out, at high tide, this gate is partly underwater. So it's pretty cool. It looks like it's just coming out of the water. And then once the tide goes down, the gate is dry. But they're worried that with rising sea levels, I mean, this is such a stupid thing to worry about, I think, considering all the other aspects of global warming. But with rising sea levels, this gate will be forever partially under the water.
Right.
Even in low tide. Like, oh, no.
Anyway, so that was cool. That was a nice, another fun tourist attraction, temple to go see. So we We were kind of hiking around, waiting for the tide to go down, because the low tide was at 7:35 or something like that. And it's 4:30 at the time. And our campsite was maybe like 3 or 4 kilometers away by bike. So we were hanging out, and we went back down to watch this. We could see the tide was going out. So we wanted to take some nighttime photos. And we took the bananas out of our tent because we didn't want any animals around the campsite to get into our food.
Yeah, right? we knew there were these wild deer.
Right.
And we had seen a few of them. They're not afraid of humans at all.
No, they're used to the humans being around. Well, so we've got this banana in the bag, and then Dan's getting out his camera gear. I'm bent over, taking something else out of the pannier of our bike bag, and all of a sudden there's a head in the bag, and it's like there are lights around us, but it's a little bit dark, and I just screamed and like holy cow, right in front of my face, this deer has its head in the bag. And I just, like, jump back, grab the bag. Well, this deer starts, like, following me and chasing me around this, like, stone, I don't know what it was, like, pillar or something, right? So I'm like, oh, my God. And he, like, starts, like, going after the bag. I put the bag up on this stone monument thing, and the deer can't reach it, but he walks away. So later Dan's like, oh, I'm just gonna eat a banana for a snack. So you eat the banana. Well, the deer comes back and he starts headbutting you in the bag, but he actually started wrestling with you.
Oh yeah, I pushed him away and he's just started ramming his head into my forearm, like bam, bam. Luckily he didn't have antlers, or they were little stubs, or he could have done some serious damage. It's like, get out of here.
Yeah, I think they must, earlier that day, we saw two male deer wrestling right on the path to get to the temple. It was like a tourist little road, and there's just deer walking on the road, walking everywhere, right? So they're wrestling, and I was like, oh, man, they don't have their antlers. They must have trimmed them down. So now I know why. So when I was watching that deer come after you, that's why they don't have antlers. They must shave them down.
Maybe, but some of them did have antlers. So.
But they had stubs.
Yeah.
They just had stubs left.
Yeah, it could
be. So they must have, because there's so many humans there.
Yeah.
For that tourist attraction, then it just would be so unsafe.
I mean, it was quite comical, I'm sure. This deer was like 40 pounds probably, so I greatly outweighed it and stuff, but I was just trying to push it away and fighting with it. And there's no garbage cans either. There's nowhere to throw your stuff out. I'm walking around with this banana peel that the deer wants. And I don't want to feed the deer, but there's nowhere to throw the thing either.
So then I'm watching. Dan's looking for a garbage can. He's walking up and down this lane and this little road. And I'm just kind of monitoring the bag that's still up on the stone thing. And it's, you know, several feet off the ground now. And this deer is just following Dan. Dan's just trying to shake it. He's just following him.
Yeah.
And eventually we had to just put the banana peel in a pannier, and we found the garbage by the ferry. The ferry had tall metal garbage cans with
deer
couldn't get into them. Yeah, deer-proof. Kind of like bear-proof type stuff you would see at like Yosemite or something like that.
Yeah.
Know? So.
Anyway, that was pretty funny. And then biking back, we hadn't brought our bike lights with us. So we were biking back in complete pitch dark. Near this shrine, there's just thousands of people. It's a super popular tourist area. Well, as soon as you get away from that, almost no one stays on the island overnight.
No, just a few apartment buildings and a few, yeah,
the
up and down
island,
hills, yeah.
It just empties out. And so there's no streetlights, and we were just biking on this completely pitch black road with deer on it, just trying to avoid the deer. Don't run into one. We didn't have any lights on our bikes. It was quite the harrowing experience, but we made it, and our campsite was fine.
It's one of those things, like, we have all the gear we need. We've got everything. You've got a French press for our coffee. You've got lights. You've got tools. You've got, you know, spare bike tube. We've got warm clothes. You've got, you know, everything we need, right? But sometimes you don't take everything with you because you just want to go for a quick little walk or excursion. And you're like, oh, crap, we don't have our this. We don't have our that, you know.
Yeah. So that's what happened there. Anyway, we're going to have to turn this recording off for a little bit and get some new batteries because my device is screaming at me now. Like, it's about to die. But we'll continue this. We're going to go to the 7-Eleven today, pick up some new batteries, and we'll finish off because the story of yesterday is particularly crazy.
All right.
So let's do that.
I already gave a little foreshadow to it, so.
Yeah, but we'll come back to it.
All right, sounds good.
All right, we're back, and it's several hours later. We just had a really relaxing afternoon.
So as we were saying, part of the bike touring challenge is keeping the batteries charged. So now we have, even though we're up in this remote-ish campground, there's still a 7-Eleven nearby.
Yeah,
we managed to get some more batteries from 7-Eleven, and while we were there, we did a quick Google search for onsen, and lucky us, there was one close-ish, so about like 7 kilometers away. But it's a pretty good bike ride there.
And onsen, I don't remember if we said before, it's hot springs.
Yeah, so onsen is hot springs, which is heated from the natural water or from the, I don't know, volcanic whatever is going on here in this island.
However that stuff works.
And the Sento is a public bath, which is heated by gas. Those are the local bathhouses.
So I think this one was actually heated by, like, volcanic activity or whatever. Geothermal.
Geothermal, probably, up on a big hill.
It's awesome. I mean, you get a shower, okay, so that's something you don't get when you're camping.
We're clean. We don't smell anymore.
Yeah, we're super clean now. And this, I think we said before, Japanese people sit when they shower, so it's pretty interesting. You sit in a little, on a stool, and you wash yourself, and
wash your hair. This one had free shampoo and conditioner and soaps and everything. And
that's great.
This one also had an outdoor area, which is super great to have a view of the ocean from the outdoor bath.
Yeah, there's like basically a hot tub outside, and they separate it by gender, so everybody's naked. And you're just sitting in the hot tub looking out over the ocean.
It's the best thing for sore bike touring legs and shoulders. It is the best thing.
And it includes a sauna.
Yes.
Which we haven't had since Finland. So that's another awesome thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, where were we?
We
biked, so we were last talking about when we were on Miyajima, when the deer was headbutting you and you were eating the banana.
Yeah, I kicked that deer's ass. I think that was the end of the story.
And then the next day, we took the ferry back to the mainland from Miyajima after seeing the tourist attraction of the Torii Gate and the temple there. And then we continued on biking yesterday.
Right. So that was 2 days ago, and that was a longish day of biking. Not too much of anything significant happened.
We mostly just are trying to get in a flow of avoiding highways and hills.
Yeah, and they're both, because this is Japan and it's a mountainous country, and it's a country with a lot of people. Those are both
kinda
pretty hard
to avoid.
But we did our best.
We did find a great river to bike along.
Yeah.
And for a long stretch, we could bike along that river, kind of villagey-ish. We stopped and saw that the bridge, Iwakini, or what was it called? I'm so sorry.
I forget what it's called.
Name the thing.
It's an arched bridge that's like 1,000 years old, and or 500.
Five arches, and I believe there were no nails used in making this bridge.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So we checked that out for a bit, got some lunch, kept going, and we ended up in a small city. Hikari. And there was listed on Google a park near the beach that was supposed to be with camping, but nobody was there. And we were about to set up camp there. It would have been okay, but there was a noisy road next to it. But on the other side of the park was another park abutting the beach, and that park was much more secluded. So.
And, you know, we just don't quite feel comfortable. We don't pay money to stay somewhere. If it's not an official campsite, which that one was listed as a campsite, but we kind of feel uncomfortable just setting up camp in broad daylight. So we kind of just hung around town a little bit, went to get a little snack, Yeah. Found a spot we wanted to put the tent up when it was dark outside, which is whatever, that works. But
well, the thing is, we're assuming it was a campground because it was listed on Google as a campground, but anyone can put it on Google as a campground. That doesn't really automatically mean it is a campground. So yeah. I don't know, it's a gray area, who knows?
Right.
But we set up our tent in stealth fashion, got up early, took it down so as not to get in anybody's way.
Right.
But it was a quiet night.
Yeah.
And the next day, that was yesterday then, morning, we spent pretty much all day just biking. And the one thing I noticed right away was the wind in our faces.
It was windy yesterday.
It was the first time we really had a strong wind going against us.
Yeah, and I was wondering kind of all day, like, why you were biking so slow. I'm like, man, damn, I must be kind of tired today.
Yeah.
It's going kind of slow, but, you know, I didn't want to say anything and be like a mean wife being like, dude, man up, puppy. Why are you going so slow?
I just thought it was like a little bit uphill everywhere. It just felt hard to bike. And we did have one long hill.
We had one long hill. We had to go around a mountain, a few tunnels, you know, a few semis. But otherwise, it was a pretty easy day. And so we also had a bit of a challenge finding a place to charge up yesterday. We wanted to find a place to sit and charge up, but we managed to find a place. And then as we were biking out of, was it Hofu?
Hofu, right.
We're biking out of Hofu. We were sort of in like this small town next to Hofu.
We were aiming for a campground.
Yeah.
And I think we were about 8Ks from the campground. And we're trying to get there before dark.
Yeah. And so we charged up just with enough time for us to still bike to the campground just before dark. And after biking out of this small town next to Hofu, Dan's tire goes again. Same back tire.
Psst. Yeah, just flat.
Shit. So he pulled over, and this time we're not really close to a bike shop. We're like 8 kilometers back the way we just came from a bike shop. So we've got everything we need. We turned the bike over, but we had a hell of a time trying to get the tire off.
Well, I've never done it. I've never changed a tire. I just figured it'd be easy. I've
done it with somebody else, but I wasn't the one who actually pried the wheel off myself. I just helped with it, and they were able to do it. I've seen other people do it. I took a bike maintenance class. I've watched videos, but, like, never actually been the one to pry the tire off, which was quite, it just didn't want, it. We got it going right away, but we couldn't get the tube off the lip.
Yeah. I believe Chairman Mao once said, you learn to fish by fishing. And we're taking that philosophy with our whole bike trip. We have no idea what we're doing. And
well, the kind of weird thing is, it's not one of those, okay, before you go on a bike tour, you don't just say like, hey, let's take the tubes out of our bikes for fun today. Let's just go out there and practice. I guess maybe some people do that, but that just seems dumb to me to be like, I'm going to turn my bike upside down and like take off a perfectly good tube and, you know. So anyways, we had to wrestle with a bit. We both did parts of it.
Yeah.
So
I sent Katie off to look for a bike shop just in case there was one that wasn't listed on Google.
I was looking for campsites mostly, in case we didn't make it to the next campsite.
And possibly a campsite, possibly a hotel. Like, oh, damn, it was getting dark. We're like, now what do we do?
And I came back, and you had the tire off.
Yep.
And you had tried to patch the tube. You put 2 patches in.
I found a big chunk of metal in it and took that out, and it had gone all the way through the tube, so I had to put 2 patches
like,
on.
Ah, that's why you were biking so slow all day, because your tire is probably low on air.
Right. But I put these patches on, and I put some air into it before putting the tube back in, and it still was losing a ton of air, so I must have had, like, several holes in that tire.
Yeah, so it was time to just, we have 2 spare tubes.
Yeah.
At this point, it's dark outside. We decided to just use one.
Oh, it wasn't that I didn't want to use the tube. I just was worried we'd have to take the whole tire off the back wheel. And I didn't want to have to re-thread the chain because I don't know how to do that either. And that would be potentially a really difficult thing. So I was hoping we could just get it done without taking the wheel off. But then it turned out, since we have disc brakes, we just learned this.
Yeah, we looked that up online.
Since we have disc brakes, you don't have to take the whole wheel off. You can just take it part way off.
Yeah.
And like anyone who knows anything about bicycles is just laughing their asses off now.
Probably.
Because we know nothing.
Go ahead.
Whatever.
And then I'm sitting there like, how stupid are you? Are we to be on a bike? Not you. How stupid are we to be on a bike tour with like out knowing how to do this basic stuff? But we do. We're figuring it out. That's how you learn, I guess. So.
Right. Exactly.
And you know, it's also again one of those lessons that travel teaches you. Is you just gotta stay calm. You gotta stay patient. You know, I was like, listen, I'm gonna go look for a campsite and a bike shop. Like, you got this. We're gonna fix it ourselves. You got everything we need to fix this.
Right.
You got it. Sometimes you just gotta remind yourself. You gotta give yourself a little mantra. You gotta take a deep breath. Step away for a minute. Take a pause and come back and you know, have some faith in yourself. So you did. And you finished it. Patched it.
Probably, well, brand new tube. Probably took an hour to finish that, and it was totally dark. And
yeah.
we each have headlights for our bikes, and they each are USB rechargeable, which is great until they die, and then you can't recharge them.
And you have a million other things you need to recharge, like all the every day. We've got to charge our phones and our spare batteries every day, so it's
higher priority stuff.
One more thing.
Well, and the fatal flaw of these lights is there's no way to make it so that to lock it.
Oh,
so,
right.
So it doesn't, because so like the button is really easy to press by accident when you have it packed, and it just always happens. You accidentally push the button.
Yeah, yours is constantly turning on inside your bags when we're not using them.
And then it dies.
But we also have, in addition to bike lights, we have headlamps. So both of our headlamps are going.
Yep.
And so, we use those to head out. To find the campsite.
Not ideal, but it's something. And as soon as we got out of this little village, it was just pitch black. No streetlights anywhere, just totally dark. And we're just navigating these little tiny roads with headlamps. And
the Google blue dot on the blue dot
trail. That problem.
So we're biking along, right? And Dan kind of just wanted to get there. We decided to continue and actually go to this campsite that is in a park because the reviews for this campsite were pretty good and it was free. And I'm really glad we did end up coming here because this is great kitchen, clean bathrooms, great views, a lot of space, hiking trails, which we're not going to do because the legs are too sore. But anyway, it's great. I'm glad we came here. So we're going along these roads. And Dan gets off the course because it's like the little, tiny little bike lane, village roads. We're now passing farm fields and some rivers. And at one point, you're just like, oh, let's just take this way. It'll get us back on trail. And we're biking on this paved partway, gravel partway thing between a greenhouse, like elevated to the top of a greenhouse with a greenhouse on one side and like a farm field and like a whatever on the other side, and I'm like, damn, where are we? Like, where are you taking us, you know?
Well, it was one of those, I could see.
And there were holes, too.
I could see the road we were supposed to be on.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this will get us there. We'll get to that road. And there were giant holes in the pavement that just come right up on you because you can't see them until you're right there with a headlamp.
So we did. We got back onto the route, and biking along, and Dan keeps looking down at his phone, trying to make sure we're on the route. Well, he bikes straight in for a tree, and I'm like, Dan! Tree! Boom! Dan swerved, but he still hits the tree. And, you know, our bags are pretty heavy. We both have two panniers on, plus a bag on top of the panniers. And so the panniers just take him down.
Yeah, I was just looking down at the phone. I was so sick of stopping, looking at the phone, trying to figure out where we are, starting up again. I did that like 10 times. I'm like, okay, I can just keep riding. We're on a bike trail.
Well, there's like 8 feet of bike trail. And then there's like every 10 feet, there's a tree. Yeah. And he's like, hey, where did these trees come from? And he turns around and he's like, oh. And there's like a tree every 10 feet.
Yeah, I didn't
realize
it.
And he thought they just magically started appearing or something.
Well, I just was looking at the phone and I saw this like flash or something in front of my face. And I just instinctively swerved and stuck out my hand and just kind of karate chopped the tree.
And so at this point, I'm just telling you, like, listen, like we just we just got a tire fixed. Let's not add the hospital to the list of the daily events today. Like, let's just take it, like, stop and check as many times as you want to. Like, let's get there. If it takes us longer, I don't care. It's dark outside. It's not well lit. We're on these small roads. Like, just be safe and let's get there in one piece, right? So we start biking along again. Dan's like, all right.
Gotta show those trees who's boss.
Anyway, so we continue on, right? And we're getting closer. And at this point, several of the trees have been chopped down. So some of these little, like, patchy square spaces along the bike trail have trees in them still. Some of them don't. Well, what does Dan do? He goes right over another one. This time it's a stump, and he falls over again.
This time I didn't see it coming. I just ran right into it.
But I'm like, Dan, you have 8 feet of space in a bike lane. Why are you running over this spot where there would be a tree? And he's like, well, I don't think there'd be a tree there. Well, there's either going to be a hole or a stump. And sure enough, there's a stump, and you hit it, and you fell over again.
Yeah, but in my defense, it was because I was looking at, or I was wanting to turn.
Well, there was that guy on the corner, too, that kind of distracted you, and then you were...
Yeah, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there was this guy walking, and apparently he couldn't see our headlamps because he kept walking. And I rang my bell a couple times just to alert him we were there. I didn't want to collide with this dude.
So you were going to turn right, and then you saw a guy there on the corner, and then you just were too close to the spot where the trees
thought,
be, and you ran over the curb.
I thought, I'll just pull over to check on that intersection.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And it just bam, it flew over the handlebars again.
So then each time that this happens, number one, I'm like kind of annoyed and freaked out because I get freaked out. I don't want to go to the hospital. We're not even more close to a hospital right now, and that would really suck. And well, also I care about you and I don't want you to be hurt. So second, I don't want anything else in the bike to break. And I also don't want our bags or anything to break. And each time you do this, like, all of your stuff gets jumbled up. We've got to set the bags up again. You've got to retie everything, make sure everything is loaded properly.
Oh. So I hit two trees.
So you hit two. A tree and a stump.
Long story short, yeah, I hit two trees. But and I'm not really sure what this means. If it maybe means that I love the trees so much that I just want to hug them. I just want to, like,
you weren't hugging them. You were hitting with your bike.
Or maybe I hate them so much that I want to knock them over.
Both of those are stupid. Anyway, so we got to the campsite.
Yeah.
There's a million spots open. This place must be swarming in the summertime. But in the fall, there was like four tents here. And there's like 35 campsites. And a great kitchen. We sat down, made some dinner. They got some great stools you can sit on when you make dinner. It all worked out. Today we had a great day, rest day, went to the onsen, got cleaned up, and tomorrow we're ready to head on.
Yeah, and I think whenever you get into a really difficult time, and then you get out of it, it's always weird coming back to normal mode again. Because we were in that kind of frantic, like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen mode for a long time. Like, oh, flat tire. Oh, no. Hit a tree. Oh, no. Hit a tree. Oh, no.
We kind of started thinking, like, oh, man, we're going to go all the way to this campsite, and it's going to be, like, barricaded up and barbed wired and, you know, which happened to us earlier in this trip.
Yeah, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
We were kind of, like, expecting it to be a dive and just, like, end up camping on alongside of a farmer field. And we were kind of... I had all kinds of thoughts going through my mind, but whatever, it worked out, and here we are.
So we're in that mindset, like, really hyper alert and tense, and everything's going wrong. And then we got here, and then, as always seems to happen in those situations, it's just like a party. And, like, these people just came up to us, they're like, oh, you're on bikes? Oh, here, have some food, and, like, why don't you come sit with us and eat with us? And
yeah.
Like, we just want to make dinner by ourselves. And,
yeah, you know, and we had some whiskey, so that helped. You didn't know that.
Yeah.
When you hit the trees, you didn't know that I had actually bought a little whiskey for us to have as an aperitif. And so it was like, it's okay, Dan. I have a treat for you, you know.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's good to give yourself some treats while you're riding on a bike all day for several days straight. So.
All right, so that's our story until now. And we've got 2 more days until we need to be in Kitakyushu. And hopefully we'll meet up with Miyamoto. We'll let you know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Then hopefully we'll be able to catch one of those ferries. We're not quite sure about that.
Hopefully we'll find some more onsen or sentos. Hopefully Dan won't have any more trees. Hopefully we won't have any more flat tires. And
a lot of question marks still, but
yeah, it'll work out. Whatever. Whatever comes our way, we'll figure it out somehow. So
something will happen.
All right.
All right, everybody. Until next time.
Until next time.
Thank you once again for listening to the show. For more information about me, about Katie, about some of our photography, writing, all kinds of good stuff, you can always go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number, 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next time.